My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you're a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break and stay retro. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I'm Darren Hupke, and back again with returning guest and friend of the show. I've upgraded you there now, since this is going to be multiple episodes in. Upgraded to friend of the show status, Dave Jackson from Tales from the Backlog. Welcome back to the show, Dave. How you doing?
Thank you for the upgrade. It's an honor. Good to be back. Good to chat with you, as always.
Yes. We have done a few episodes together, and I mentioned this in the last episode, but you also contributed to an article to one of the issues of Retro Game Zine, the Mario Tennis issue, so go pick that up. You want to read some of Dave's writing, but also listen to his podcast, Tales from the Backlog. Let's catch up. Let's figure out a question I can kind of ask you. What was an episode that surprised you the most of your show? Like, was there a game you thought going into it was going to be a slam dunk game you were going to love and didn't? Was there a game that you thought you were kind of mediocre, lukewarm on, but ended up loving? Like, what is a game that maybe surprised you the most that you've covered on your own show?
It's a good question. Let me take a quick look down here.
Yeah. You've got a lot of episodes, so you've done a lot of
okay,
shows.
Okay, so a game that I like, I didn't think was going to be very good that ended up surprising me that was awesome was the Indiana Jones game that came out last year, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. I thought that game was going to be terrible after watching trailers. I will caveat that by saying that I have never played a game by Machine Games, and apparently if I had, I wouldn't have thought that they would, you know, make a shitty game or something like that. But I was not impressed by the trailers, and I also don't care about Indiana Jones as a character, as a, you know, franchise. I think the movies are fun, but I don't think about them ever. So I thought that game would suck, and it is awesome. It's a really good game. On the flip side of that, a game I thought I would like that I ended up disliking is I think Dave the Diver is a bad video game, and it has a universal acclaim. The character has the same name as me. It should have been a slam dunk. I thought that game had no soul, and I hated it. It's one of the very few like trashing episodes I've ever done on my podcast, because other than like the music and the art, I thought that game was soulless and bad.
Yeah, the that game had such like this. It came out and it was like this indie game, like darling type vibe to it.
Yeah,
but it really wasn't. Like, it was like funded by gosh, I can't even.
One of the biggest media corporations in Korea.
Yeah. So it was just like, oh well, this isn't quite what I thought it was, but you know, it definitely was just trying to wear like, you know, the clothes of like an indie game and everything. And I had some friends who loved it and everything. I never gave it a shot. Apparently Arc System Works published the anniversary edition of it. I didn't know it was due for an anniversary at all. I just pulled up Wikipedia at the moment. Like, what anniversary?
1 year or 2 year anniversary? Yeah.
What does that mean?
It sold a lot, so maybe they felt like it was worth celebrating. I'm not mad at the company, like the studio who made it, for like making it that way. And I'm not really mad at anyone who like looked at it and was like, it's an indie game, because there's so many indie games that are based on that, you know, that graphical style, that gameplay loop, etc. I just thought it had no soul, and that was my big complaint with it, which is admittedly a pretty big complaint.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's not easy to, I mean, I don't know that there's a list of games with no soul that you do enjoy. Like, I think usually if that's a bullet point on it, it's on a list of reasons why you don't
It strikes 1, 2, and 3 all together, I think.
Okay. It says a physical anniversary edition featuring crossover content from Guilty Gear Strive was published by Arc System Works for the Switch on June of 2024. So that's random.
Okay.
Good on them. And then Machine Games, I also, for some reason, I'm not familiar with the name, so I had to look that up, but those are the folks who did those recent Wolfenstein games. And games that I've never personally been kind of attached to or like leaned towards at all. So I also skipped the Indiana Jones game because I also don't care about the character. He's very uninteresting to me and his mumble speak and, you know, his adventures, but like, hey, people love him.
I like Harrison Ford, but like when I was a kid, I didn't watch Indiana Jones. When I was a kid, I watched Star Wars 700 times. I didn't have time to watch Indiana Jones. So I didn't grow up with this like nostalgia for it. So it was like, it was kind of interesting playing that Indiana Jones game without being like, it's so cool that I'm playing as Indiana Jones. I don't care about that. And it just like as a game, like from the game design perspective, it's just really, really good. And so you could turn that character into anything. That game would still be awesome.
And that's praise for a great game, like mechanically. So, you know, it doesn't matter what the skin is. I've tried to convince Death Stranding naysayers to like they should play it. Where do you stand on Death Stranding? Have you played Death Stranding? Are you a fan of the games at all?
I have played it. I didn't play the sequel, but I do love the first game.
Yeah.
I think, again, gameplay-wise, like game design-wise, infinitely interesting game. I don't care at all about the story or characters in Death Stranding. I think that that's a mess, but like the act of walking from place to place is like, I just eat it up. Like, give that to me as much as you can. I love it.
Yeah. I just rolled credits on the sequel and I loved it just as much as the first one. But people who, you know, try to just dismiss the game as like a walking simulator or you're just UPS the game or whatever. Like, I'm like, I try and like describe the mechanics, but like in a different way, like, oh yeah, there's this game I've playing, you know, like you're this underworld demon who's got to deposit the souls of like those that they've defeated. And so it's like a resource management of these people's souls. And like, I try and just replace all of the mechanics of like delivering boxes and connecting, you know, the world. And they're like, oh, that game sounds fun. I'm like, well, gotcha. I'll replace the souls with boxes and replace, you know, this with this. And it's just Death Stranding. Play it. You'll like it. And people are, you know, still not into it.
Yeah. It's just because like when you say you're walking from place to place and carrying stuff from place to place, it doesn't sound interesting. But, you know, I think that if you boil down gameplay and try and figure out like what makes good gameplay or engaging gameplay engaging, it's decision making and strategizing. Like, and it can be like on an instant, like, you know, split second basis. If you're playing fighting games, for example, all the way to take all the time you need if you're playing XCOM or Darkest Dungeon or something like that. In Death Stranding, you're constantly making decisions about like, what route do I take through this so he won't tip over and lose my stuff in a river or something like that?
Yeah.
It's like constant strategizing, testing, decision making. It's like, it's the same thing. It's just, it doesn't sound good on paper, but it's like, it's genius the way it worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because, yeah, do I overload myself at the start and deliver like a bunch here with like this right route? Do I keep some space because I'm going to find some stuff along the way and maybe detour to like something new or some other area that I haven't seen yet? You know, like there's a lot going on. It's good games, but they're strange, complete Kojima strangeness, but good games.
Yeah. They need an editor for sure, but yeah. They're good games.
I mean, like I also, something about it, I just want it to be what it is, and it is, and I don't know what's happening, but it's like a David Lynch movie to me, and it's like, I don't need to fully know what's happening to, like, find entertainment from it, but, like, don't ask me to try and explain it or, like, identify its, like, meanings for anything, you know? It's just, like, yeah. All right, we're on a journey of discovery here. It's the destination, or it's the journey, not the destination. All right, well, let's get into some this or that.
Let's do it.
Cartridge or CD?
Cartridge. I love that tactile feel to it. I know the cartridges are objectively not the best format for video games, but I like a cartridge.
Okay. What's your favorite cartridge?
It's got to be the N64 because it's just the thing I grew up with. That or like the Game Boy cartridge, the original Game Boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the, I'm a little older. NES games, I always remember as a kid, like, feeling kind of like hollow, like you can tell like that, like, you know, the internals of it isn't the entire shape of that square, you know, so it always felt like kind of a loss. SNES felt, again, like way more plastic than what was really necessary than there, but those Nintendo 64 cartridges had like this heft to them. They were smaller than all of them. They got them more condensed down, but they also had this heft to them. So like those are the best cartridges in my opinion as well.
Yeah, they're good.
Where was I? Oh, do you want to group up or be a lone wolf?
Ooh, as in like multiplayer or solo?
However you'd like to define that.
That's how I'm going to define it, and I'm going to go lone wolf. I do not like playing multiplayer games.
Okay. Get good or easy mode?
Ooh, again, the framing. Mm-hmm. I want there to be an easy mode, but I don't often switch to it. I'll say that.
Okay. Short and sweet or epic length?
You know what? Fuck it. Epic length. Give me a long game. I like a long game. I mean, I love a 1 hour, you know, high impact indie game. I love those to death. But I mean, I'm playing a lot of long games right now. I'm into those too. Give me a long epic.
Yeah, I just rolled. Like I said, rolled credits in Death Stranding 2. The next game I'm starting, I think, is Triangle Strategy. And I want to like put something else in between them, but I'm like, no, that's what I'm feeling. Like, that's okay. Give me another 60 to 80 hours in this thing. Do you want a custom character or a scripted hero?
Scripted hero. Give me a character and make them interesting. There's like with exceptions, of course, like I thought making my own character in Baldur's Gate 3 was fun and like role playing them. But generally, I will always prefer if you give me a character that has defined characteristics. Give me Geralt in The Witcher 3. I don't want to create my own Witcher, for example.
Mm. Okay. And last one, handheld or TV?
Handheld all the way. I am currently going sicko mode. I'm playing Silksong with the Switch 2 D-pad just because I love the handheld form factor so much.
Okay. All right. Well, those were the this and or that's. We'll move into an icebreaker here. Again, I will shout this out. You can submit your own icebreaker for me to ask our guests in an episode. To do so, you need to be a $1 Patreon supporter. So if you want to head over to patreon.com/Darren Hupke, you can check that out there. But for the minimum monthly contribution of $1, you can spit your own icebreaker questions that I can potentially ask here and shout you out if I select one. For now, we will be asking a question from my list, and I'm going to pick, what video game character would you be friends with growing up?
Friends with growing up. So let's see, they would have to be younger, right? I'm not going to be friends with Ichiban from Yakuza growing up. Let's see, that's tough. I'm going to say that I'm going to be friends with whatever age appropriate version of Ichiban there is. I bet he was a fun friend to hang out with as a kid, you know. 13-year-old Ichiban Kasuga from the Yakuza series. Give me that. That seems like a solid friend to have.
Okay. Yeah, he could be like Yakuza -13 instead of 0. You have to go farther back in time.
Yakuza, Like a Dragon Origins.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Okay, cool. Well, let's get into the main topic. You also had your own mystery surrounding what you were going to select here for this. So the evergreen question here that I love to ask is, what is an average game or even below average game that you love that doesn't get enough attention? So you maybe had some clarifiers or some modifiers here that you wanted to throw back at me, but what is one of those ones for you?
So a philosophical question for you. What type of average game do you prefer? Do you prefer a game that is just like fine in all aspects, you know, pleasant? Because that's what I'm taking average to mean as far as video games go. Like it's not an objective 5 out of 10 or something like that. It is a pleasant experience. That is the average experience that I get from video games is actually quite good. But is it like generally fine? Okay. Maybe not super memorable. Fun. Or is it one of those that like it would be an objective 6 or 7 out of 10 because it's like really amazing in some aspects, but really bad in some aspects. But they take big swings, they hit some, they miss some, that type of game. Which of those do you prefer?
I think more of the latter. I think it's one that like, you know, opinion to person to person is going to vary because of the size and scale of how they received those flaws potentially, or the, you know, the things that kind of came up short, but it still like took swings that maybe you could redefine or could figure out in a way that was better. Cause like, yeah, like a game that you might read in a magazine review that got an average score, but you play it and you're like, well, what are they talking about? Like, no, this was awesome. You know? Yeah, sure. The controllers were janky, but like, if you could figure it out, like there was a whole world to love here. So that's my idea of it personally, but again, it's kind of how you want to define that there yourself, but that's where I lean personally.
Yeah, I'll say like the in the former category for games that are like, you know, they're just like pleasant to play, maybe they don't make a big impact. I actually really like sports games. I think a lot of them fall into this, you know. Give me, especially like from the golden age of sports games, what I consider to be like 2003 to 2006, I consider that to be like, I don't know, there's a nostalgia element to that too, but like I think MVP Baseball 2005 is an average game. It's a lot of fun though. It's good, not super memorable, but good game. But that latter category, is where like you get like really special things that are maybe objectively on that like average scale. So the game that I will go with that in mind is Deadly Premonition. Have you played that?
Yes. I was at this episode. Sorry, we're recording this like back to back. I mentioned the David Lynch Death Stranding stuff. Was that was just a minute ago, right? Yeah, whatever. Deadly Premonition is my jam because of like just that odd B movie feel, but also this like odd like inspiration from like a Twin Peaks David Lynch style like universe. You know, like it's not obviously a 1-to-1 thing of it, but like reading about it and seeing how like weird it was, like I was on board with it out of the gate, and yeah, playing it, it you know had some jank, but you can look through that and find like some really fun stuff, and I was on board for Deadly Premonition.
Yeah, I think the game is like it's really really interesting. And it's one of those that, like, I think, like, public consensus is probably on, like, that average scale. But it's because there's a lot of 9 out of 10s and there's a lot of 2 out of 10s in the, like, you know, out there and how people feel about it. And so it lands in, like, this, like, yeah, Deadly Premonition, 6 out of 10 average, which, you know, we look at that and be like, oh, yeah, average game. It's fine. But Deadly Premonition is not. It doesn't fit into that category. I think that the Twin Peaks influence is super interesting. It makes for a really like atmospheric game. The characters are all memorable. They're really cool. They're trying to do like a Shenmue thing with like, you know, characters having their own schedules and like they go home at certain times. And you can't talk to them after that, like that kind of stuff. And it's like the execution of all these like big ideas are like mostly fine. I think the combat is like really, really bad. It's like one of the worst combat systems I think I've played in a long time. It's terrible. And I remember like doing some research and one of the developers had said, like the lead developer whose name, they have a pseudonym, I'm blanking on it. They said that it was basically like the publisher told them like, you don't have enough combat. People want combat in survival horror games, so you have to have combat. So they like threw together this shitty Resident Evil 4 type combat. It's really bad. It hurts the game experience a lot, and so it ends up being this game where you're like, there's good parts, there's really bad stuff in the game too. And so it's one of those, the reason I'm using it in this category is because if I had to give this a number score like out of 10 and be like the old objective thing, if you're grading it with a rubric, it's like a 5 out of 10 game. But I'm not, luckily I don't have to do that. So I can get on my podcast or your podcast and be like, this game's actually really cool. It's super memorable. I recommend it to basically anyone to try it just because it's so different. You're never going to play a game that's like Deadly Premonition ever. Yeah. Apparently not even Deadly Premonition 2, like totally hit that mark again. They certainly didn't, from what I hear, didn't improve on the first game, but it's so idiosyncratic and unique that like it stands out. It's super fun to think about and talk about. My Tales from the Backlog episode on it was 3 hours long because there's so much to discuss. And it's so fun to talk about it. And I hadn't even seen Twin Peaks by that point. I've since like gone back and watched most of Twin Peaks, but like even without that touch point, it was still like a really cool game.
Yeah, it's funny that I'm putting together the issue for Snatcher for my retro game zine, and one of the contributors talked about how they first experienced Snatcher as a game before they saw Blade Runner the film. And so it wasn't necessary for them to understand that movie to enjoy the game. The game kind of remixed and reimagined like ideas and concepts and familiarity from there, but to tell its own story. And same thing here. Like obviously it's taking the inspiration and like the charm or like the feel that evokes from there, but reimagining it in its own context and in its own game. So there isn't a necessary like, you don't need to know what influenced it or what it's referencing, you know, to enjoy what it is, because it's not just 100% a 1-to-1 thing that way. It's just kind of inspired by. So it's neat to kind of play it in that order and then go back and then discover some of like that campiness and those strange characters and what's happening in the world of Twin Peaks compared to this.
It's funny. First of all, the director of the game was Sweary 65. I don't want to, people who are familiar are probably listening being like, how could you forget his name? Sweary 65. I'm glad I didn't say Suda 51 because that jumped to mind, but didn't seem right in my head. It was funny watching Twin Peaks after playing Deadly Premonition and just being like, oh, the protagonist of Deadly Premonition is exactly like the protagonist in Twin Peaks. Like, with the serial numbers filed off, like that type of copying. There's like specific things from the game where I'm doing the Leonardo DiCaprio like pointing at the TV meme when I see it in Twin Peaks, because I'm like, they just took that scene or like that that area of Twin Peaks in Deadly Premonition. They just like did it. They didn't like change it. They just did it. It's kind of cool from that perspective coming to Twin Peaks late.
Yeah, there were apparently a few more kind of like more direct nods to it. The game actually was announced before Deadly Premonition. It was announced as a game called Rainy Woods that then was troubled in development and wasn't coming together right and ultimately canceled.
Yeah.
And they just took kind of like the scraps and concepts and ideas of there to kind of rework that and make proper like Deadly Premonition. So there was a lot that was carried over between like the two scenarios of that, but apparently there were even more like obvious like Twin Peaks like nods and things in that version of the game, which is kind of interesting, which I've seen people trying like restoring like that version or like restoring like the content from that version like within the game and everything too, but it's just because of the fandom, you know, people digging for more. What about it do you think that helped you like see through that kind of like that quote unquote averageness to like find something that you enjoyed? Like what aspects of the game like really stood out to you the most that I think kept you playing?
Let me just say, at no point in the experience of playing Deadly Premonition was I like, this is an average bog standard video game. it's more of the, like we said, it's more of like the, if you were forced to give an objective number score about it, which is boring, we'll just, you know, it's boring to approach video game criticism like that. But if you had to, it would be pretty average. But what kept me going, even through like the bad stuff, was the story, I think, is really interesting. I was always interested by the murder mystery, by the different turns that things take, the weird non sequiturs, the just how strange York is, the protagonist, you know, the different characters that you meet around town. Like when a cutscene started, I was always interested in what was going to happen. What were people going to talk about? Because it's odd, you know, that's the Twin Peaks influence there. So that stuff was mainly what was interesting. But I also liked, you know, I think, so you spend a lot of time in the game, like driving around the town. I think the controls for driving are some of the worst I've ever experienced. but I liked driving around the town. And, you know, maybe you see an NPC and you stop and talk to him, and then you get like a side quest from them or something like that. And it kind of like happens organically because you're like, oh, I stopped at the gas station because the car's out of gas, not because there was a marker on my map saying the gas station attendant has a side quest for you. It's like, I'm playing the game, I'm in the vibe, I'm low on gas, I got to stop here. Oh, also, I talked to them, they have a side quest. Like that kind of thing was always cool, always kept me going.
Hmm. Yeah. Where did you originally play this on? Like what system did you discover this on?
Well, I tried the Steam version, which just straight up didn't work. Like I went on like Steam forums and people were like, to get the game working, like here's a bunch of mod packs and then like cross your fingers and pray because it's probably still not going to work.
Mm.
So I found a copy on Xbox 360 and that's how I ended up playing it.
Yeah, that's what I originally played it on as well. That was the first console it was released on. A couple years later, they had like the, at least in America, they had the PS3 version came out, and by then I had kind of switched over to that as my primary console. So I was like, oh, I should play this again. And I think I bought it and it sat on my shelf for years, just unplayed, because it was so close to me originally experiencing it. But then, you know, eventually got far enough away that it was gone. I've not played the sequel. I'm just worried that it's just not going to be, you know, the same, you know, quote unquote experience. Like, you know, you're not going to catch lightning in a bottle twice, you know, is what I'm just worried about going into. So I've just not given that any time of day.
Yeah, same. I've heard that the sequel is like interesting kind of in the same way that the first game's interesting, but it's not as good. And they didn't improve the things that maybe you would have hoped they improved. So, you know, I'm kind of curious, but I'm not like impatiently waiting before I can play it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's Deadly Premonition. That's cool. I like that we went down this path, because that's definitely a game that I envision for this question for sure. Not everyone's going to love it. Not everyone's going to, you know, write, you know, essays about how amazing it truly is, but they probably are going to write something about it, because it's unique, weird, you know, off the beaten path, and definitely a game that, you know, people can love. So thank you. Thanks for sharing. But we did it. That's the episode. That's the show.
Yeah, we did it.
Again, anything you'd like to plug, obviously your podcast, Tales from the Backlog. You can listen to, a great show that Dave hosts, every week. It's weekly. Yeah, it's weekly.
Yep, every week.
You cover a great game, you dive in, you analyze it, you discuss and break it down, through like the different elements that make up the game, but always spoiler free for the first portion of the episode. Then you have a very nice and safe spoiler wall for anybody who maybe isn't aware of the game. I listen to many episodes, even if I haven't played the game, because it's a great way to kind of learn and hear about it. And, you know, I'm not going to be able to play every single game, so I don't try and pretend to avoid spoilers for everything unplayed. Some things I just, hey, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to listen to this still, though, and here, enjoy it. And you always do a great job. You always have great conversation. You always have great guests. So huge recommendation for me. Y'all check out Dave's podcast itself. The links will be in the show notes here as well. But anything else you'd like people to know about you, Dave, or anything else you want to follow, plug, or share?
Yeah, just mainly the podcast. That's where I do most of my stuff. It's also on YouTube. If you like a video podcast, I make those too. The Deadly Premonition episode was episode 137. That was in October 2024, if anyone wants to go check that out. Also, if people are hearing this in October, you can find new episodes coming about Silent Hill 3, The Outer Wilds DLC, Echoes of the Eye, Lies of P, I'm trying to remember, Fear and Hunger, which is another like very interesting game, and Slay the Princess. Those are the five for October. So you can find me on Blue Sky too. My Blue Sky handle is very not easy to read and remember, but it's at TFTBL pod. And on Blue Sky. You can find me there. I talk about games.
Great. Well, thanks for joining up on another episode, Dave. We'll definitely have you on a future episode. We've got some new questions we've formulated and made, so I'm looking forward to having you back on in a future episode.
Same. Cool. Looking forward to it, man.
Have a good one.
Thanks.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.